You're listening to the Fat Dude Digs Flicks Movie Podcast Network.
And now, let's talk about with your host, Andy the Fat Dude.
Is up, everybody. This is Andy, the resident fat dude of Fat Dude Digs Flicks, coming to you recorded from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and it is time for an all-new Let's Talk About. If this is your first time listening to Let's Talk About, hello, welcome. Let's Talk About is a chat show where I am joined by a guest. We talk about their life, their loves, and a movie that has had an impact on them. However, this is a different episode. This is a different beast entirely. This is what we like to call a promotional episode, where we, help get some attention for something going on in the community. And that thing going on in the community is the Old Town Dinner Theater's production of Death Trap. And it will be starting on February 16th and run all the way through March 17th. Tickets are available online. We'll talk about that again later in the episode. But this is a show you will not want to miss. I am joined on this week's episode by the director and the two leads of the production. So let's see, John Bowe is the director, Andrew Steinhaus and Cameron Rohde are the actors, and we talk about them for a while, and we talk about the show. It's always kind of fun with, like, a murder mystery, because you don't want to give too much away. We we talk about the show, but we don't dive into specifics, so that way we help kind of wet your whistle a little bit. Whet your appetite. I don't know. We try to get you hyped up and excited for the show, and then tell you how you can get tickets and all that good stuff. So that's what this episode is going to be, a conversation with John, Andrew, and Cameron. And go ahead and pop your popcorn, grab a soft drink, kick back, relax, and let's talk about Death Trap. All right, everyone. I am very excited today. We're doing things just a little bit different on this week's episode. We're still having a good conversation, but instead of talking about a movie this week, even though there is a movie out there, we're going to promote a play that is going on at the Old Town Dinner Theater, my old stomping grounds. And I am blessed to be joined by three individuals involved with the show. One of them I go way back with, and that would be the director, Mr. John Bowe. John, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Like I said, when we signed on here, it was really good to hear your voice. It's been too long, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, we've acted together, sang and danced together, we've worked together.
Man, we've had some experience. We've had an experience on stage where we lost all background music and had to sing a cappella. We got history, my friend.
Yeah.
I don't know how we did that. I don't know how we did that. Also joined today are two actors from the upcoming play Death Trap, Andrew Steinhaus and Cameron Rohde. Guys, how are you all doing?
Good. Nice to meet you, too.
Yeah, nice to meet you as well.
Not too bad today. I will take how warm it's been.
Oh, yeah. If this has been, like, I feel like we have been unseasonably lucky this year. You know, we had that one blast, but now it's nice again, and knock on wood that it stays this way for a while. Cameron, we had talked for just a second before we got started recording too, that we had worked together before, though neither one of us can really pinpoint exactly what it was that we did together.
Yeah. Looking back on it, I I remember hearing Old Town like radio commercials with you, and I know there has to be something like in the Sioux Falls area that we have worked on,
Yeah,
but I don't
and I just for the life of me cannot
know.
remember. And I could like, and I could be like, what if I'm way wrong? What if I'm like, no, maybe I'm confusing him with somebody else. But no, I feel like I remember a little Cameron running around doing a play. So, but anyway, guys, I'm really excited to have you on today. I'm going to kind of kick things off the same way that I start every episode. We're just going to take a little bit more time with it because we've got the three of you here. So what I'm going to ask is I'll start with John, go to Andrew, then go to Cameron. The question is, guys, who are you? Where did you come from? What is your origin story?
Ooh, well, I was born and raised in Sioux Falls. I started doing theater when I was about 10 years old and continued throughout college and went straight into my first job at Old Town, which is assistant artistic director. And all my life, especially throughout college, I had no interest in directing. I liked to act, and that was fun. That was great. Took directing class in college, and I remember at one point saying, "Why do I have to take this class? I'm never going to direct a show when I get out of high school or when I get out of college." And so I've been directing shows for the past 13 years, pretty constantly. I've learned to really love it. I think it was that uncertainty first starting out, not knowing, what it was going to be like or how to do it. But yeah, at this point, I thoroughly enjoy it.
Man, John, I always feel like my job as a host is kind of to like, butter up the guests, just make sure that they feel appreciated and stuff. And it's never that it's disingenuine. But John, my appreciation and praise of you is probably like I could go on for days. I feel like you are one of the most talented, underappreciated talents in this city. I think you are an incredible actor, incredible director, and your set design with what Old Town is working with is just it's second to none. So, yeah, I do. I think the world of you. I think you're fantastic. So if nothing else comes out of this episode, John, just know that I adore you. So
Well, thank you very much. That's nice to hear.
Andrew, let's hear your story. Where did you come from, my friend?
I was same as John, born and raised in Sioux Falls. And I guess I started like doing theater back in like late elementary school, and then middle school and high school, I mainly focused on doing tech, and that's kind of what I gravitated towards. Basically, all through school was the tech side of things, and it wasn't until like recent years where I started like maybe I want to get on stage and started auditioning. And so, yeah, this is actually my 12th show at Old Town, but only third on stage with them.
Wow. Did you do a
So.
lot of the board ops kind of thing before?
Yeah, my main focus that I loved doing was running the light board and programming the light design of the show. I've done like the board operations of the sound and microphones and everything, and I even run I'm one of the sound technicians at my church.
Nice.
So I do that on a weekly basis basically with sound. But yeah, no, I gravitated towards the light aspect of the theater more
Yeah.
so.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm glad that you had that crossover to the stage, but still have that, deep love for the tech aspect. They're all fantastic. All fantastic to be involved in. Cameron, your turn. Where who are you, Cameron?
Yeah. So I'm from Canton, South Dakota, which is just a little south of Sioux Falls. And I initially got into theater in like second grade with the Dakota Academy of Performing Arts. I grew up since that point doing almost every single play that they had until middle school or something. And then I began gravitating, doing a little bit of more community theater, which was a lot of fun to get that experience and the knowledge from older actors in the community, get some more adults into it. So I did a lot of that. And then I did in high school, I didn't do a lot of on stage theater. I more became a behind the scenes technician-esque person. That is where I found how much I enjoy doing like the set design and building sets.
Sure.
So I initially came into Old Town as a stage manager and all that, and that is what I typically do is either stage managing. Recently, I've been assistant directing with John, and then, yeah, very rarely do I get on stage. This is my third, technically, time on stage in the last, oh, 2.5 years of being at the
Sure.
theater.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, it's kind of it's and I think like for you guys, the thing that's really interesting is that John has kind of gravitated towards a lot of the directorial and behind the scenes stuff and I may be talking out of turn here, John, but you started off more performance and of course doing the behind the scenes stuff a little bit. But now it's like your primary focus is, kind of directing and set designing. And then for the other two guys for this show, it's, you guys were used to doing the backstage stuff, but now here you are, front and center, in this crafty mystery suspense thriller kind of dark comedy. This is a mishmash of genres, this play, if I remember correctly. So
Yeah.
that's a lot of fun. John, I think what I'll start with then is what was it that drove you to theater? Like, what was it that drove you to kind of living in this creative space? Like, was there something about when you were younger that you just found yourself kind of wanting to be like the center of attention or wanting to find like this place where you could kind of like express yourself? What do you think initially drove you to the world of theater?
Well, I mean, when I was a kid, I think it just looked like a lot of fun. I've actually always been kind of the opposite, where like I liked attention, but I hated it when I could see someone was trying to get attention. So like I never wanted to be that guy who's really pulling for it. But when you're on stage, you do get that attention, and you're supposed to have that attention. So I mean, I always enjoyed that, but yeah, at first I think it was just about fun. When I was in grade school, we'd go to the community playhouse, as it was called at the time, once a year to see one of their children's shows. And Andy Henriksen, the director down there at the time, he'd come out before the show and give a little speech. And one thing he'd say is, "If this looks like fun to you, come audition. They're open to everybody." So I did. And I mean, I didn't make a show for the first, I don't know, year or so that I auditioned. And then once I finally made one, it was pretty much constant after that. I think I did every children's show down there for 3 years straight. And then I got, and as soon as I got into high school, I kind of went back and forth. Did a couple shows in high school, a couple shows at the community playhouse, and then but yeah, it pretty much constant since then. But when I got to college, I really fell in love with Kevin Smith and his kind of ideology. And I'm like, that sounds like the perfect life to, if I could just spend the rest of my life making movies with my friends. I'm making plays with my friends, so it's not exactly the same, but it's I'm kind of living the dream, I guess.
It feels very, very similar because it's like, and I think this is just talking from my experience at Old Town, and I imagine that you all guys can kind of relate to this, that once you do a show down there, it's an experience kind of unlike any other because it just feels like you're giving like 2 to 3 months of your life to this production because you've got the rehearsal process, then you've got the run of the show, and it's like you kind of bond a little bit deeper than you usually would. Like, for some shows, some people show up for like, a couple rehearsals a week, not the whole week run, and then you're there for the performance, but you kind of keep to yourself, and the run of the performance is only like 2 weeks, so it doesn't really, it's hard to connect. But with an Old Town show, like you're just there for so long and around these people, and they become this huge support system that it's almost like a second family. And I think that you kind of get to, you go once, and that feeling is so nice, and it's hard not to go back for another show. And John, you've now been going back for a couple decades worth of work. So yeah, I love the Old Town experience. I wanted one more question for you, John. You had said that when you were doing auditioning for the Community Playhouse, and the first year you probably didn't get cast anything. Now, from the other side of things, as a director, is that something that you kind of feel is a good thing for actors? Like if they go back, you go back to an audition, you show up to an audition, you don't get cast, but you show up to the next audition, you don't get cast. Like there it feels like there's something there where after a certain amount of time, the director starts to know you and kind of can see your growth and your evolution. Do you ever kind of contemplate that when you're casting a show where you're like, oh man, I see that this person has come far. I think maybe I can put that faith in them. Does that kind of, I don't know exactly how I'm asking this question, John. I know what I'm trying to get at, but the question part isn't quite coming out. Does it help from to kind of see people come back multiple times to kind of help you go, yeah, now I see what I want in them?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because I mean, when you work with someone in a show, you really get to know them. I mean, as an actor, and so moving forward, because you've had all that time working with them and watching them, you kind of get a good feeling for what they can do. But if you've never met or worked with someone, they show up for an audition, you get a really short period of time to make that decision. So, I mean, number one, the more they come back, you see their determination, which is good. And also, as they come back, first time can be a little nerve-wracking, so maybe they didn't have the best audition, or there's been a number of times where it's like, this person is great, I just don't have a part for them in this show. I hope they come back, because they're, if they audition for the right show, they'd be my number one choice, but I just can't use them in this show. And I've had, I've had a few actors over the years who finally get to that show where it's like, I haven't been able to cast them, but now, bam, here's the show for you. And so yeah, I would say definitely. Well, and the more you audition, the better you get at it. So any one looking to get into acting, don't get discouraged if you don't make shows. Just keep going, keep auditioning. Even audition for shows that you can't do. Like if you have a conflict with performance, you can't just go for the experience of it. You'll learn and get better.
Yeah, it is. I feel like an audition is the actor's way of stretching before a workout, because it's like, you're still practicing, you're still trying, you're still learning something, strengthening your acting muscle. So if it's, a show you can't do, there's nothing wrong with at least, with putting that down on the application, but showing up for the audition to say, hey, I just want to learn some more. I just want to put some more work in, and and see, see what feedback I can get. So yeah, I think that's great advice, Shannon.
And the more directors you get in front of like that, I mean, it might be something you audition for a show that you can't do, and in a year that director is directing some show, and they need to fill a role, whether it's someone dropped out, they didn't get the right people at auditions or whatever, and they'll be like, oh, that guy who auditioned for this show, he would be great in this one, and
Yeah.
you might get a call. So you just never know what can happen from an audition, even if you don't make the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Andrew, what was your kind of like, I guess, what really inspired you to kind of latch on to the technical side of things? Was there like and this is kind of going to be similar to the question I asked John, but I wonder if there was like I know that a lot of scenic designers especially they like to build things, they like to or they like to tear things apart, and then that's what kind of helps them like figure out how to put things together. But what was it for you that made you kind of want to hop into the technical side of theater?
I guess it was just more the aspect of watching, being able to see the show, and kind of like watching the show come together from an audience point of view, as well as all the inner workings of what went into the show. Yeah, I mean, especially like with the lighting design, for me, being able to like just try something
Yeah.
and then actually see the actors on stage. Because a lot of the times when I've designed shows in the past, it'd be just a bare stage, only be me in the theater working on it. So then actually being
Right.
able to have actors on stage and see, oh, that was cool,
Yeah.
or what if we did this instead? But then yeah, like ironing everything out and then having the performances and actually seeing it all come together into this like amazing show is kind
Yeah.
of what drew me to the tech side of things.
As someone myself who has never done lighting design, and just like there is a science and a creativity to it that like my brain just does not like can't even comprehend. Where do you find your kind of like inspiration for? Like, is it all kind of like, you just kind of visualize what things look like? Like, how do you determine, I guess, how do you determine how to design a lighting layout? Because I feel like to a lot of people that don't do that on a regular basis, it's kind of like the unsung hero of the show. Because if an actor's not lit, you're not going to see the show. If a part of the stage isn't lit, you're not going to see the show. But where does that kind of like inspiration come from on how to design that light setup?
For me, I guess I pull one what the playwright has written in the script itself, but then kind of reading the scene in general and kind of imagining if this were to be played out in real life and not on a stage, how and where it would be played, kind of is another aspect that I think about. Like, I did the lighting design for our season opener this year, Fox on the Fairway, and it took place on a golf course, in the clubhouse. And I, in the script, it said that there's a set of French doors that lead out to the balcony patio space of the golf club. And I was like, okay, I need a light back there to kind of like to show like the outside world of what it's going on in the day. 'Cause like there's a night scene, there was a morning scene, and then there's like an afternoon scene. And I was like, I need some sort of color back there to like dictate that, like, oh, this is taking place at night.
Yeah.
When the stage itself is inside, so it's always going to be almost the same color, and same brightness, than it would be outside at night. So, So it's kind of like taking what the playwright was envisioning as well as imagining your take on it and where it actually takes place.
Yeah,
It's
kind of
how I
finding
approach it.
that, yeah, finding that balance on how to make like how to translate reality to
Yeah.
this theatrical space. Yeah, I just think,
Exactly.
yeah, I think it's lighting design is so cool. It's just something I have never been able to comprehend. Like I just in my head, I just can't see it. But it's like I feel like, from a directorial standpoint, I know how to communicate what I want. I just do not know how to like put it into fruition. So my hat's off to you, Andrew, for your passion for lighting design. Cameron. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say it's been fun because like I've been learning because we got a new lighting system at Old Town, and being able to learn that was a game changer for me.
I wonder too for you guys for who've been there like with the old system then with the new system is and I haven't been there since so I don't know is the new system just kind of like oh my God we now know what real lights are like or was it like this I guess kind of stress of frustration of like how do we figure this out like what was the change like for you guys?
I guess for me, I've used the board that we now have in the past
Oh, sure.
at the community theater in Sioux Falls here. But I'd never programmed LED lights with color. So, and learning that was fairly easy, I would say, just because of me already knowing how to work the board. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's been a game changer with this new system.
John, was it kind of thrilling for you to have this kind of change to the light board that had been there for a very long time?
Yeah. Well, and actually so we got a new light board, I want to say 5 years ago or so, which was really just an updated version of the super old one that had been there since before I was there. But this, I mean, this has been a game changer, and I have just barely brushed the tip. Andy's showed me a little bit. Randy Rude, he's on our board. He's been showing me a little bit as well. Eventually, I'm gonna know how to do everything. But yeah, Andy and Randy have been amazing, and just as the director of a show, to know that like that I don't have to, if I want, a certain color light in a certain spot, used to be, okay, well, I'm pointing that light there. That's that specific light that I mean that's all it is and now it's like I can turn that light blue for a scene change I can make it or have them make it orange for early morning or I there's just so much more that can be done with less instruments than we had before because I mean with the old system we'd have everything at full and it was bright enough, but it wasn't super bright. I think Andy was telling me at one point he hasn't had them above half, because I mean they're bright, they blend. I guess it's just beautiful. Like I so thankful for this new lighting system and what we can do with it.
Oh, like I almost feel like I should just come to a show just so I can see, like, be with the new lights. Like, I'll John, find a show where I can sit down for, an hour. No, that's so cool. That's so cool. Cameron, I want to talk about because, in my head, I remember you as an actor. So I want to talk about kind of your kind of like transition to like stage management and the technical side of things. Like, what was it that kind of made that part become so appealing to you? Because I think the stage manager feels like they're once the production actually begins, they're kind of captain of the ship. So what was it
it.
for you that kind of made you like, you know, yes, this is the part where I want to focus on now?
So, growing up, we always had tools lying around the house. So being able to like play with tools and just mess around and be crafty with them has always been something about me. And that was just an extension when it came to high school and being able to have the option to build such great big sets was huge for me. Like
Yeah.
that was a huge draw. 'Cause I went to Lincoln and
Sure.
my sophomore year is when I first did some tech stuff at in the theater, and we made like casters or castered wagons that had like full sets of stairs on them that were meant to be moved throughout the entire stage. And so having this tech background for me was basically foundational for my transition to Old Town,
Yeah.
because I started as an assistant stage manager. I kind of came into my first show pretty much into production, just thanks to, again, Randy Rude.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just sat and parasite is the wrong word, but I learned and I took everything that Andy did for that show, and I put it together, and I took what I've learned from other stage managers. And my first stage managing opportunity was with that late spring show when we did Caught in the Net. So like being able to do that and basically, like you said, being in charge as soon as the show began, it was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah.
It's fun to be able to walk around and be like, hey, here's what's going on, guys. I'm the one turning this play. And if you know me, you'll know that everybody loves to razz me and make fun of me. So that falsehood of authority that I had was such a facade that everybody knew and could see through. So it's a fun thing to walk around and be like, hey, let's go, guys.
I
I
gotta
am.
interject here. Cameron can give it just as much as he gets it. I think that's why he gets it so much.
Yeah, I
The best ones do. That's the way it usually goes.
Well, yeah, it's my older brother always says, yeah, if I didn't mess with you, or if I didn't like you, I wouldn't mess with you. If I didn't like you, I just wouldn't give you any attention.
I wouldn't talk
And
to
apparently I didn't scare him off with that first show that he came down there
at all.
for,
Yeah. You didn't
so.
scare me enough.
Yeah.
Well, the crazy thing with this show is that for the last, you know, 3+ years, almost every show has been stage managed by Andy or Cameron. So going into this
Wow.
one, knowing I was casting both of them, I was like, well, who's going to stage manage now?
Yeah. What do you do in that position when your two most reliable stage managers are now in the production? You're just like, who's my ace in the hole now?
I you'll
You
love
talk
it.
my twin brother into doing it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I got really lucky, because yeah, Andy's twin brother, who's been doing tech with him all these years, agreed to do it. And yeah, and actually, so when Andy and his brother Matt were seniors in high school, I was their tech director at Washington. There was right before, I think it was 2 years before you and I took over at Old Town. They they had Jim become his own tech director, so it kind of eliminated my job, and Washington needed a tech director, so I went over there. And at that point, Matt and Andy and a couple other kids had been pretty much running the tech de department, so I made my job really easy. I could more supervise because they knew what they were doing. And then, yeah, all these years later, Andy shows up at Old Town, and I'm just like, holy crap, like I haven't seen this kid since high school. And I mean, he's not a kid anymore at that point. But yeah, now we've been, working together pretty closely for the last, 3+ years. And it's been great to see his growth from high school till now. Like, in many ways, he's definitely surpassed me on the technical end. And that's just been great to see.
From not like really knowing the situation, Andy, you having a twin that stepped in as a case manager is like the best plot twist of all. It's just made me kind of like go, oh man. Also, my younger brother's name is Matt, so we're also an Andy and Matt pair, which is a lot of fun. So that's cool. Cameron, I'll start with you for kind of the next half of this. I'm gonna talk about movies a little bit just because this is a movie podcast. So
For
I'll just
sure.
kind of like ask you just for kind of a generality on this, because I think we'll dive into your play here, but were there any movies that you had watched maybe growing up that kind of like, I don't know, maybe inspired you on the course of doing theater stuff, or was movie or were movies for you more of like just entertainment and a distraction? Was that ever, was it watching with purpose, or was it watching just for fun?
Yeah, I never was like big into the acting side of movies until I became an actor. So most of the time, even now, is movies are more of an entertainment device for me, and to see great stories, and even to see like good books that I have read turn into this visual medium. Probably early on, one of the bigger movies in my development would be The Princess Bride, which is a pretty perfect movie. But yeah, anytime now, I watch movies more for the entertainment, but also breaking them down. Like, I don't typically watch horror movies, but when my friend wanted to watch a horror movie with me, we kind of watched it and then dissected it at the end. It was freaky and insane.
Yeah, it's fun to kind of like not tear those things apart, but kind of break them down piece by piece and kind of like get into the psychology of them. I always find that to be, a lot of fun, especially with the horror movies, because there's part of me that, like, as much as I love horror movies, there's part of me that goes, who is this person that made this? Like, what are they going through
Oh
that this is what came out of
yeah,
that?
and I think to some horror movies and even like thrillers, the amount of planning and like details that go into it are insane. Like the movie that I watched, it was last week. I watched Hereditary, and like the amount of every single little detail in the movie is insane, from like the foreshadowing and just every little piece that you just didn't see on the first run through until you go, oh my gosh, that's connected.
Hereditary too. And that's a movie that like sticks with you
Oh
after it's
yeah.
over. It just feels like you feel this kind of like sense of dread that you just can't shake afterwards, or at least that was how it was for me. Like, well, how was it for you?
Like, it was chilling, especially the ending of a slow fade back on the treehouse is just so intimidating and ominous, and just all of the business that goes down in the movie is just so, like, it's thrilling, but it's scary, and it's, for most of the movie, it's nothing crazy. It's just grieving.
Bleak, just completely bleak and sad until it turns into utter terror. That's a good way to kind of sum up Hereditary. Andrew, I kind of want to ask you a similar question, or the same question, but were there movies that kind of like had that impact and influence on you that kind of helped steer you in the direction towards theater and technical theater, or was it more of just, more just the entertainment factor for you?
A lot growing up, it was just more for the entertainment factor. But what got me more like into the theater side of things was like my grandparents actually taking us to community theater performances in their town, in Southwest Minnesota. So that kind of like started the theater bug in us, or in me, I guess. But yeah, movie wise, it was more just for the entertainment value growing up. But it has kind of evolved lately into like, ooh, this would be fun to be in the cast for this movie when I'm watching it now.
What were some of the ones that when you were younger that you really kind of found yourself like, I don't know, were you a repeat watch guy? Were you a guy that kind of played or as a kid kind of like played the same movie over and over again?
When I was really, really young, apparently my brother and I would watch The Lion King over and over again to the point where we ruined the VHS tape twice. I
The
believe we ruined it twice or something, but like we wore that movie down. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there are movies where like I'll watch it once and be like, okay, that's good. I don't need to watch it again. But then there are some movies where I'm like, this is a good movie. I'd watch it again. One that I can sit down and watch would be like Hidden Figures. I think that's a great movie to just watch over and over again.
Great movie. Great, like great kind of telling of this historical event that I don't think, I think when we think of the space program, we don't necessarily think of the people behind the scenes. And I think to kind of hear their story of these women who, first off, we're dealing with being women in science, and at that time, that feels like that was unheard of. But also being black women in science, just like unbelievable. And I think that movie being released kind of helped bring their story out to the forefront quite a bit more. So yeah, that's a great movie. Great movie. John, you had talked a little bit earlier about how Kevin Smith was influential for you, the getting to do stuff with your friends. Were the movies like the movies of Kevin Smith, was there anything about them in particular that kind of like pointed you on this path? Or was it just that, just the stories behind the scenes that kind of were like, God, I just want to do that just because I want to be able to have that life too?
Well, I mean, it started out with the movies because they, like, to me, and I mean, I don't know if everyone had this experience, but especially in high school and college, like the way we talked, the things we talked about, like his movies felt like real people. Like, it didn't feel like a performance, and so that's what pulled me initially on. I mean, Clerks, Mallrats were hilarious. I loved them, but the one that really like pulled me in, the one that I probably watched the most, is Chasing Amy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it can be seen as raunchy, definitely not PC now, some of the discussions they have, but the overall story, this the structure of it, and what they go through, the emotional journey that they go through, I really connected with. I mean, I've always been a romantic, and some people might not see the movie as romantic. I showed it to one of my friends in high school because I'm like, I love this movie. You have to watch it. And she could not get past the description of the different lesbian intimate acts that they so
Yeah.
like it was like the door was closed at that point, so she couldn't fully appreciate the rest of it. But that's, I mean, from a writing standpoint, that's where I really, really started wanting to write, because I mean, just it, there's something about Kevin Smith dialogue that, I mean, I can tell that he wrote it. Like, even when it was needed that Masters of the Universe thing on Netflix, like you could tell he had his hand in it. I mean, it
Yeah.
was, even though it was nothing like a a Kevin Smith movie, but yeah, so like it's kind of just loved how he tells or told stories after I just got pulled in by the humor of it all.
And then I'm a huge Chasing Amy fan as well. I think it's very smart. And yeah, maybe now it's a little problematic, but I think that the thing behind it is that it really is probably his sweetest and most earnest, he is a romantic, and it's certainly a 90s kids like way of dealing with romance in an ever-changing world. But I think Chasing Amy is fantastic. When you I guess maybe what I want to ask then, John, is when you tackle a new project as a director, like, are there the world of movies and the world of theater are so different, but there are things about them that are so similar for you. Are there directors or movies that kind of help influence your, I don't know if necessarily style, but maybe influence your presentation? Does that ever come into play when you're thinking about putting a show together?
I mean, it's different from show to show.
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally we'll be doing a show and there will be an aspect of the show or something that reminds me of, this movie or something like that, where I'll lean into it a little more, where in my mind it's kind of an homage to that movie without anyone ever having any idea that that was an influence. Well, as far as I know, because, it's never something big and overt, but
Yeah.
no, the it's interesting. Like the there are a number of shows that I would love to do that just aren't necessarily old town shows, for lack of a better way
Yeah.
to say it.
Yeah.
But even when, in that lane of old town, there's so many shows that I connect with. And whether it's, something where it's, it's not a show that I've fallen in love with in the past, I can find something about it that really drives me to want to do it. One thing I'm really big into is looking into past productions of a show and go, even if it's something small, how can I attack this differently? How can I, try to innovate something about it? Rather than just sticking to the exact stage directions and descriptions, and I'll try to have my own personal take, even if it's not 100% what the playwright had in mind, but just something to put my own spin on it, or like make it my own.
Yeah. Guys, I feel like I want to sometime in the future have you all on individually so we can kind of carry on like this part of the conversation a little bit longer because I'm willing to go deep in the woods with like what do you think about this? What do you where do, what's your psychology here? But there's three guests and we've got a focus in mind, so I'm going to kind of boil it down now to what we're here for, and that is to help promote Old Town Dinner Theater's production of Death Trap. Andrew, I'm going to start with you kind of in this part of the show. Andrew, what is Death Trap all about? And then what is your role in the show?
So, Death Trap is about a older playwright who is kind of going through a dry spell, I guess you could say, where he's trying to figure out what his next play is going to be, trying to come up with something. And he receives a manuscript for this thriller from a younger playwright who attended the seminar that the older playwright held, and it's really a really really good script that the idea of killing the younger playwright and passing it off as his own comes to mind, and it's just kind of the thought process of that older playwright, and what he ends up doing, I guess, would be the best way to say it without giving away too much. But my character is Sidney Brule, who is that older playwright. So, I mean, going through the script during rehearsals, and seeing the character come to life, I guess you could say, has been fun. But yeah, it's just kind of would my character actually go through with it or not?
And I wonder too, like when you kind of step into a role like this that has, a character who has murder on the mind, what is that like? Where do you kind of find your, I guess, character impulses, your decisions, I guess your acting decisions? Like where do you find those? How do you get to that place when you're on stage and in rehearsal, to bring that character to life?
That is a very good question because I am nothing like my character at all in real life. So, I mean, it's been fun for me just like experimenting and trying things that I'm like, okay, maybe this is what my character should be doing. This is how he acts. But a lot of my inspiration just comes from like other friends in other shows that have kind of had a similar character trait of what my character is, and just kind of like not imitating them, but just kind of like pulling some aspects of their performances together.
I think that actors sometimes get called like the greatest thieves that ever existed. And it's not so much like just a blatant steal, but it's like you see something and you're fascinated by it and you want to try something and put your spin on it. So I think finding those influences, like you said, it's not, you don't want to completely imitate the other person, but they just did something that you found super fascinating. So you wanna try and do it too. So I just think that's, yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Cam, what who's your character? What's their I guess what's their place in this world in Death Trap?
So my character is Clifford Anderson. He is the younger playwright. So
Nice.
this character is such a, he wants to be such a good playwright, just like Andy's character in Sydney Brule. He writes this amazing amazing play, and he's like, yeah, I want to be one of those playwrights that people talk about for ages. And he wants to both show it to Sydney for like, hey, look what I did. This is because of you. You inspired me. But also looking for a bit of rewrites and looking for making it even better. And it's
Working. Oh, go ahead.
no
I'm sorry.
go.
I was going to start another question, but you keep going.
It's just like, it's cool to be working in that situation where it's like, yeah, I am trying to be like this hopeful young student who has the world ahead of him.
Yeah,
That's all
it
I got.
feels, yeah, I was gonna say it kind of feels like this is the character who is like, not desperately like longing for his mentor's support and guidance, because it's not doesn't really sound like it's there's a sense of desperation, but there's kind of like you feel that this character just wants to be at on that level and wants to be recognized on that level. In a show like this, Cameron, when you're working like so closely with, another person, where it's like, you're kind of you two are kind of the flip side of the coin, where you're kind of playing this game of cat and mouse and antagonism and stuff like that. How does that translate to you guys kind of working together? Because I always feel like that it's the most interesting thing. Like you two are supposed to play these kind of enemies, even if you don't necessarily realize that right away in the play. There is that sense of antagonism there. But working on a show like this, like I almost feel like you guys get closer. Like you're kind of bond a little bit differently. So what's that been like from your perspective, Cameron? Has it been like, kind of nice getting to dig so deep in the trenches with Andrew on this show?
Of course, out of the gate, when I immediately saw that he and I were going to be acting opposite each other, I was ecstatic. Like when John called me and told me that, I was so happy to hear that we were working together, because, like I said, we have this, I am very antagonistic, and people like to play around with me. Andy and I seem to have gotten into that bond with each other where it's deeper than most of the people at the theater. Like, because we have done so much together, we have become such good friends that being able to have this opportunity only just shows off our amazing chemistry that we have together. And like doing the dance, as you said, with him is such a, there's carefully choreographed moments of our conversations and the way that we move with each other that is so like important. And I think it would be much, much more challenging to do it with somebody who I have no idea who at the beginning of the show. Like being able to come in with that relationship already established and being able to just build on that and kind of like show it off of how good we are with each other has been just such a blessing.
When you guys are in rehearsal, and this can be for either of you or both of you, but when you guys are in rehearsal together and you've worked so, you already have this close friendship going into the show, but then you're working so closely together doing the show. Did you guys kind of have, like, not necessarily a second language that just the two of you understand, but just kind of like a maybe like a professional shorthand where you guys just kind of understand each other in a way where it's like, okay, I'm gonna try this, and the person just kind of is like, oh, I get it. I'm gonna follow up with it. Do you guys feel like you've kind of established that kind of connection when you get to work together?
I would say so. Yeah, we have a way of like being able to switch between super fun, let's get to work, let's try something interesting, and let's put up with each other, if you will. And yeah, it's like when we are on stage acting or even running lines, we're able to get into this like secondary character with each other that really, really feels like we're getting into it.
I would have to agree. Like a lot of our rehearsals, we start out just like joking around and whatnot, but then like once we get into it, like you said, a switch has been flipped, and like we put on this different side of ourselves to go through the show, and it almost feels oh, what would be a good word to describe it? I mean, in a way, it almost feels natural. The interactions between our two characters, as well as us, in general.
Yeah. John, is it easier as a director when you have two actors who are close playing two characters that have this kind of a relationship between them in the show?
Oh yeah. When I in casting the show, that was one thing I was very excited about, because I mean, knowing that Andy and Cameron already had this chemistry, but also, I mean, it's not exactly the same by any means, but they already had kind of this relationship of, Andy's the older tech guy, and Cameron was the up and coming tech guy, especially, 3 years
Yeah.
ago when he first started down in the theater, where they were, like you said, echoes of their relationship and the base of the relationship in the show, where I could really see it, and see how we could build off what they already naturally have.
Yeah.
Yeah, from that perspective, yeah, that's I was really excited. But then what they've done since we've started, where as a director, I don't rule with an iron fist. Like, there's a lot of directors who are like, this is exactly where you cross, three steps, gesture this way, like, where they're basically like, you're my puppets, and this is my complete vision. I give my actors freedom to try things, and for the most part, what they've added to the characters beyond what I've seen, has just been wonderful. And we just went off book this past week. I'm really excited to be able to really dive in more now that I can see their faces and
Yeah.
they don't have books in hands. And so yeah, it's been great working with them, because like I've been working with them almost constantly on one thing or another since they've started there. And so now to work with them as their director, and they're the actors, has been real fun.
Yeah. In the selection process, John, I know from kind of my time at Old Town that it's never just you going, hey, I want to do this show. What like how much say did you have over getting to do this one? Was this one that you were excited to get to tackle when this was announced as part of the season?
Yeah. So this, I mean, I enjoy murder mysteries. This being like a comedy murder mystery made it even better, because in every show, especially a murder mystery, there's exposition, you know, the setup to the show. And this, in a murder mystery, there's a lot of exposition. So there's a lot of stuff the audience has to know before you can really get into the meat of it. And with a show like this, the exposition's a little more interesting because there are jokes along the way. You're keeping the audience engaged and kind of laughing while they're learning everything they need to learn. So with the show like this, like it's I feel like it's even more fun than a murder mystery because it's almost like you shift gears at a certain point where you slide more into the murder mystery from the comedy rather than starting out very serious and keeping that, you know, serious tone throughout.
Yeah. How has it been for you getting to direct this one? Has this been, you know, at this point, John, like it just feels like you are, and I mean, I think of it that you are. You're the director of the Old Town shows. So how does it feel like, is it, I guess with all that experience kind of on under your belt, like what does it feel now when you get to tackle a show? Are there ever those moments of like, you know, oh, I'm nervous to try this one, or I'm excited to try this one. Like, I guess, kind of, what's that feeling for you once you, I guess, put on your director's cap for each show?
Well, again, it's very different from show to show. There's some shows
Yeah.
where, like, from the moment we announce it, I'm excited to do it. There's some shows where, you know, I've been so focused on the previous show where I don't get to wrap my mind fully around it until right before auditions.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I mean, and kind of going back to the last question too with the selection process, because I mean, we've got a committee who does it, but I'm heavily involved in that. So,
Right.
I know going into it that it's a show that I want to direct for one reason or another. And that they've never been like, this is the show we want to do, even though you hate it, you have to direct it. So
Yeah.
I don't, I mean, they would never, like we, it's a good process where we all, I mean, Andy and Cameron are both on the play reading committee. They're actually also both board members out there.
Man.
But so, you know, it's a good process of people suggesting shows, passing them around and getting a good consensus. So yeah, like I said, every show there's something about it that drew me to it that makes me want to direct it. And I mean, if we read a show that, and I mean, I'm not going to name names of shows, but there've been a couple shows that, you know, a few people wanted to do, and I just outright said, I don't like this show, and we haven't done it. So,
Yeah.
because yeah, I mean, it's like you said before, like when we do a show, I'm living with that show for 3 months,
Yeah.
in the prep work and the rehearsal process, like. So if I can't be passionate about it, I know it's not going to be my best work. So that's what one reason I'm trying to be very careful about making sure my voice is heard when we're selecting shows.
Yeah. And I think too, like being on that selection committee, if you start reading a script and like within the first pages, sometimes you can tell if you're like, this is something I want to keep reading, or this is already out of contention. Like this is not, be it if it's something that would be too boring for the Old Town audiences, or too risque. For the Old Town audiences, I think you kind of get that impression. You're kind of like, maybe this isn't the right pick. But I think Death Trap is one of those where it's like, oh yeah, this will be one that people will really enjoy. See, excuse me, with this show being a murder mystery, I don't want to talk too much about it. And I don't want to have you guys kind of like give too many details about the show, but at the same time, I want you to help sell it. So Cameron, if you were to sell the show, and I'm gonna go round robin on the same question for all three of you. If you were to help sell tickets for the show, to get butts in seats, what is your, I guess, what's your pitch? What's how are you going to sell this show to people? to say, hey, like this is a play you want to see.
I would call this a murder mystery thriller that you have no idea how it's going to end. Like, as soon as you get an idea of where the show is going to go, the script completely flips, and it's like, no, you were completely wrong that whole time. It's something else now. And I feel like there are a lot of moments where it's just a ton of reversals throughout the entire show that I think is it's priceless, and it's going to leave the audience awestruck.
Awesome. Yeah. And all bets are off kind of script where it's
For
like
sure.
you think things are going this way, and then once something completely unpredictable happens, you've got to like just buckle up because it can go anywhere. Andrew, for you, what would be your elevator pitch on the show? How would you sell a ticket to this show?
I guess I would go with what my character's lines are at the very beginning of the show. Death Trap, a thriller in two acts, one set, five characters, a juicy murder in act one, and unexpected developments in act two.
Yeah, that's it. That's all it takes. Just tell me what we're seeing, and I'll be there. John, it's always fun as a director because it's like it starts off feeling like your baby, so you want to help nurture your baby so it becomes this thing, but then like once the production like the performances begin, like your baby has just gone off to college. So John, how would you sell your baby? What's your pitch?
Well,
The whole direction of this show, much like Death Trap, has completely changed. So
so what I would do is talk about how this show is multi-layered. So you could come see it multiple times and continue to catch new things just from reading the script multiple times, starting to pick up on them, then watching the cast, picking up on even more of them. And it's crazy, especially Sydney and Clifford, just like you said, the layers there are as the show develops. You're seeing, this being performative on top of this, on top of this. And like I said, I don't think there's any way, if you've never seen Death Trap before, you'll pick up on everything on a first watch. So it's something where you're going to get to the end and you'll think about it and just go, oh, I bet this is why they did this back, back in Act One. There were, hints of things that develop in Act Two. And so it's just, there's so much, it's such thick show, there's so much to pick up on. And the other thing I have to mention is the food. Your ticket includes the four course meal. It's soup, salad, dinner, and dessert. And it's always outstanding. Virgin, our chef out there, is amazing. And the sweetest lady you'd ever meet. So I mean, it's $55 for a ticket, and that's your dinner and a show. And you'd be hard pressed to have dinner and go to a show, even the movies, for $55. So it's a great night. Your whole night's compact into one place, and so I think it's a really damn good deal for what you get.
It's and they're like you said, they're excellent meals. Like this isn't just like you're going to get fast food and paying $20 for a hamburger and McDonald's French fries and a drink. This is like you're paying, you get an awesome show and you get an awesome meal and you get an awesome dessert. Like, let's
Oh.
we're kicking, like, everything is firing on all cylinders here. So when you go to a show at Old Town, like, you're really just getting probably one of the best all around date experiences in town. Even if you're just taking yourself or your friends, you're just going, it's just this really fun night out in the city that, I mean, in the small town of Worthing, I always call the Old Town Dinner Theater like this hidden gem in the Midwest, but with so many shows selling out, I don't know how hidden it is anymore. I think people know it's there. And two, if there are tickets still available, I think from one thing that John is saying is that you might not get everything the first time around, so maybe you should go see it a second time when it opens up if there are still seats available. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to dive too deep into the show because I don't want to accidentally set off you guys spoiling anything. But
Well,
I think
Andy,
this is a okay. Oh, yeah.
one thing I just want to throw out before we move on. The other thing
Yeah.
too, I know that not everyone has the $55 or $110 for two people.
Yes.
We've got a lot of volunteer opportunities as a server or bartender or a coffee pourer, and with that, you get the entire meal and you get to watch the show. So you get the everything that we have to offer completely free, and all you have to do is come help us out.
And it's such a fun experience, like getting to do that too, because it's like, you get to socialize with the audience, like you get to socialize with the other volunteers. So if like you go with a group of friends, like I don't know, like there's something about the Old Town experience that I just feel is really one of the best theatrical experiences in town, just all across the board. And this is coming from someone who, was an employee there for a while and someone who's done multiple shows there. Like, I'm biased, but like I'm not because I haven't been there for a while. But this is just one of the greatest places on this side of the state, and probably in the whole state, like in general. I just love Old Town so much. So let's talk about selling those tickets. So John, I guess maybe you're probably the best person to ask, where can people go to or who can they call to try and book a reservation to Death Trap?
The best way to do it is just to go to our website, otdt.org, and you can buy your tickets right there. Megan also is in the box office. The phone number is 372-4653. But really, like I said, the best way is just go to the website, because that's the other thing. We only have one person in the box office. So that can get backed up. You might not get through because other people are calling. If you go to the website, there's no line. It's super quick, and you can take care of it all there.
Has the menu for this show been revealed yet?
Has. I actually have
Ooh.
it up here if you'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
So you get your main course, you get a choice, but first, you'll start out with the tomato basil bisque for your soup, then the house salad and dinner roll, and then your three choices for entree are 8 ounce sirloin sliced and marinated to tender perfection, sauteed onions, bell peppers, and garlic in white wine sauce served over coconut rice. That's called the sirloin Hawaiian style. Then there's a Cajun chicken rigatoni or a Parmesan crusted cod. So those are your three choices, and they all come with different sides. So the first one comes with the coconut rice. The rigatoni doesn't have any sides, but it's got sausage and onion, tomatoes, spinach in the sauce, and the Parmesan crusted cod. You get long grain rice and maple glazed carrots. So like it's each meal is different. And then for dessert, there's it's a layered lemon crema shortcake.
Man, you've almost got to get like tickets to 3 nights of the show just so you can try all of these meals because they sound incredible, Incredible.
Well, as you know, that's one of the perks of being an actor out there. They feed you everything.
And then, like, you try all of them the first couple nights, and then you're like, yeah, I want this. I want to keep eating this same thing for the next like 4 weeks. So,
The food is so good, and like the portions are really good. Like
Nice.
sometimes it's too much food. We give away a
Bringing
lot
home
as we go by too.
leftovers. Andrew, what are the dates of the show? How when does this show run?
So the show opens Friday, February 16th. The house opens at about 6 o'clock for people to come in, and the show actually starts at about 8 o'clock. And we are doing performances every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday through I believe it's March 17th. And March 17th is our final performance, and that is actually a matinee dessert only performance. So no food, but you do get the dessert that has been done for the previous performances.
And then Cameron, shout out the rest of your cast. So you guys are both in it, playing the two authors, but who else is in the show?
As Sydney's dear wife, Myra, we have Hillary Croucher. Our Dutch psychic, we have as Cindy Krekelberg. And then our lawyer for Sydney's lawyer is Mindy Fisher.
Nice. The two first names mentioned kind of a murderer's row there of talent.
Oh yeah.
Big fan of both Hillary and Cindy, so that'll be a lot of fun to watch them. Guys, this has been a ton of fun. Like I said about before we start talking about the show, I would genuinely like to have all three of you back to have do your own episode at some point, just to kind of chat about, I don't know, learn more about your life, and then for Cameron at least, maybe talk about The Princess Bride for a little while, or Hereditary, but yeah, just I'm so grateful to have you guys on the show. I'll do one last little kind of round robin here. Do you guys have an individual social media presence that you want to share, or anything else that you want to add to the conversation? John, I'll start with you, my friend. Social media, anything you want to talk about? This is the floor is yours.
Well, as far as social media, and actually that's a little more Andy's department, but just follow us on the Old Town website or on the Old Town Facebook page. But the one thing I didn't want to throw out there, I too watched The Princess Bride religiously as a kid. I had a VHS that we recorded off of HBO that had Princess Bride followed by Police Academy 4 and Dirty Dancing, and I watched
What?
all three of those quite a bit.
The best. That sounds like the best combo ever. Especially with Police Academy 4 in the middle there. That's good stuff. Andrew, I'd have you on the show to probably talk about something other than Lion King, because I think I may have done that before. But if not, the Lion King is all yours. But please, any social media you want to shout out, website you want to shout out, or anything else you want to make sure we include?
I don't know. I mean, I am on Facebook. And Snapchat, but I'm more of a lurker on Facebook. Don't post much other than sharing the Old Town posts. No, I think we've got all the details for the performances and the meal and everything on Old Town's website, right there on the front page. So check it out.
Awesome. And Cameron, you're last on the list, my friend. Social media or anything else you want to make sure you plug on the show.
If you want to see updates of what I do every like 4 months, you could follow my Instagram. It is just cam.rhodey.
Nice.
cam dot rhode. I do woodworking stuff, so I have a woodworking business if you want to follow that.
Yeah, what's that?
It's just Rhodey Woodworking LLC on
Nice.
Facebook.
Okay.
Same way my last name's spelled, but that's about
Awesome.
it.
I am going to save this. This will be your incentive to come back on the show. I am going to save the Fat Five for when you guys come back individually, just because I think if we do all three of you guys at once, this we could be on here for another hour, and we gotta wrap it up. But guys, I thank you so much, and everybody, I think you should definitely check out Old Town Dinner Theater, OTDT.com. Is it
Org
right?
that
Org. Okay, OTDT.org for ticketing information. This runs from, you said, February 16th through March 17th.
Yes.
Correct.
Yep.
Awesome. And it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, with the final show on the 17th being a dessert-only matinee. You get a great show, you get a great meal, you get to see awesome people and be a part of, honestly, just one of the best experiences South Dakota has to offer. Not just theatrical experiences that South Dakota has to offer, but just down home with your family, like just a nice feeling. Guys, thanks so much for doing the show.
Yeah,
Thank
thanks for
you.
having us.
Sure. Thank you.
Like I said, anytime, I'd love to come back.
Oh yeah, we've got plenty to talk about, so we'll hop on and have a chat. Once again, a huge thank you to John, Andy, and Cam for doing the show. For real, like if you have not seen a show at the Old Town Dinner Theater, now is the time. Just a great experience. People that really put their heart and soul into putting on a good fun production. And then yeah, the food is just incredible. So you're gonna want some delicious food. So get on down to Worthing and go see yourself a play. Go to otdt.org and get your tickets there. Running Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from February 17th through March 16th. Listen, you just heard the interview. You know the dates. I think I screwed it up at the beginning of the show, but just get your tickets and go. You know what to do. And that's gonna do it for this week's episode. A little bit, a little bit different than usual, but we still snuck some movie talk in there. But yeah, first off, definitely check out the website otdt.org. But please follow all things Fat Dude Digs Flicks on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, anywhere you get your social media. Just do a search for Fat Dude Digs Flicks and you will find me there. Subscribe to this podcast, like this podcast, rate and review this podcast. Share this podcast with your friends. Like I always say, I'm going to keep doing the show until I get tired of it, but man, oh man, it would certainly be cool to earn some more listeners along the way. That just, that's what you live for. You want an audience. And I would love to have a growing audience. And the best way to do that is with your help. So please share this episode with your friends. Share the show with your friends. Subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Good Pods. If you do subscribe to this show, not only do you get Let's Talk About, but you also get the Criterion Break, where I am joined by Derek Viereck and Blake Ginnethon, and we talk about our love for the Criterion Collection proper and the Criterion Channel. And you also get The Balcony, which is a podcast fronted by Blake and Derek, where I kind of join in when I can as well. and the three of us, or the two of them, talk about just kind of general movie topics, whatever's on their noggin each week. Sometimes they'll have specific things that they want to cover. Like, I think that their best of the year list is coming here pretty soon, so you'll definitely want to check that out. But yeah, it's just an opportunity to kind of fill in the gaps of the movies that we don't cover on this show or don't cover on Criterion, and just another opportunity to hear three friends talk about movies. And what's wrong with that? If you do listen on Amazon Music or Spotify, please leave a rating or a review. That is another way to help get our podcast out there so that more people know we're there and more people can listen. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, recommendations, want to be a guest, want to leave a donation, please send an email to fatdudediggsflicks@gmail.com. I'm always excited to get new guests lined up, always excited to find more movies to watch that I've missed. The best way to kind of let me know is by sending an email to fatdudediggsflicks@gmail.com. Roll call of South Dakota podcasts. I'm always going to screw something up. I always am going to leave somebody out, and I don't mean to. I need to write these down. But definitely follow Screams from the Basement from Casey Kelderman and Sam Lenz, where they talk about their love for horror movies. Have some great interviews on there as well. Listen to the Local Lou podcast, where Lou dives into some crazy instances of South Dakota history. She basically kind of goes to South Dakota historical markers and researches them and reports back her findings. Listen to Reliving the Lights, the podcast based on, it's kind of a watch along with Friday Night Lights, hosted by Anthony Hookman. Oh, who am I missing? Who am I missing? Oh no, which one of my friends am I going to let down this week? I don't know. I don't know. I feel so bad. Like I said, I've got to write this down, but I know there's another one, and I know I'm leaving it out, and I feel like a dick. Who am I forgetting? If you're listening this far and I forgot you, please send me a nice email, because I can't take your aggression right now. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Please join us back here next week, same fat time, same fat channel, and let's talk about movies. Next week, we will have a regular episode. I've got a guest lined up. I've got a movie lined up, one that I have never seen before, and I am super stoked to bring our first canon film to the podcast. So get pumped for that. All right, everybody, have a wonderful week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Fat Dude Digs Flicks.